Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this July 11. In the past 5 months, the Obama administration has freed schools in more than half of the country from central provisions of the No Child Left Behind law, and Wisconsin is now one of those states. In exchange for the waivers, school and districts must promise to set new targets aimed at preparing students for colleges and careers. Wisconsin, according to the Department of Education, had a number of commendable proposals. In order to get a waiver, each state had to promise to show in other ways that its students and schools are improving. This hour of the program, Professor Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College. Does this mean that No Child Left Behind is essentially nullified? And of course, the big question of the hour is, how do we show that students and schools are improving in the state of Wisconsin? What does that mean? Are they indeed improving? And how do we deal with the achievement gaps between various ethnic and economic groups in this state? Big questions. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to communicate that way, is talk@wpr.org. And you can always leave messages on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Steve Correa, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, very glad to be here. Good morning.
Good morning to you. So is No Child Left Behind essentially nullified?
Well, I think sometimes it's interesting just to be able to pause for a second and be able to look back and think about when No Child Left Behind was first announced. In fact, we think of 9/11, of course, for those horrible events in New York City. But if everybody remembers where President Bush was that day, he was at a school in Florida reading a book to a group of elementary school children, as I recall, since my son was going off to first grade that day. That was their administration's sort of central goal at that time, was to announce and be able to provide support to No Child Left Behind. And there was little question as to the value and need and support of No Child Left Behind. So broad bipartisan support for that. Heck, Ted Kennedy and George Bush agreeing on something, that was pretty
pretty remarkable.
So, you know, it's a way to be able to bookend that 9/11 event with where we are today. And where we are today is a direct result, whether we like it or not, from the Bush administration's efforts to be able to say, we want accountability, we want numbers, we want specifics, and there'll be some carrots and sticks in this process, this program that we're putting together. But the idea is, you're going to change, and we're going to shine the spotlight on these, what really prior to that had been groups at least that we didn't have good data and good evidence that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, or at least getting a fair share, or the no child left behind. Now, of course, flash forward 11 years or so, and what you're looking at is, people don't like No Child Left Behind. They feel like there's a lot more sticks and a lot fewer carrots. And unless you're a bunny, you're not really wild about that. And the idea is, though, that what they're trying to do now is say, okay, No Child Left Behind has gotten us to this point. You know, it's a little long in the tooth. I think you won't find too many people challenging that idea. And it's also, because of the way it was designed, it wasn't intended to have wiggle room. 2014, 100%. Now, that's not 90 and gosh, we gave it a good shot. This is 100% of all of these subgroups had to be at the proficiency level. Now, states could set their own level, and that's sort of another argument. But the idea was everyone was going to be there. Well, anyone that's taken a statistics class or has tried a diet knows that exactly getting your goal, you can be successful and not get your goal. Well, the 100% wasn't going to happen. So, boy, they've tried with Congress. Congress has tried. We go back and forth. Nothing's coming out of Congress. So, Arne Duncan, and the Obama administration have sort of become a branch of the legislative branch, if you will. And, you know, this is everything from mileage on automobiles to lowering federal interest rates on mortgage loans to rewriting the waivers on No Child Left Behind. These are all done in the executive branch, and Congress is saying, wait a minute, what about us? And, of course, the Obama administration is saying, yes, what about you? But anyway, they're not able to produce anything. So the Arne Duncan and the Department of Education have then been able to put out, now, whether this is constitutional or not, I'll let people far smarter than I am decide, but they're doing it. They've been able to say, okay, No Child Left Behind is in its present form. We're going to grant you waivers. We're going to encourage waivers. We're going to really want waivers. Please send us your waivers. And you know, over half the states have been granted waivers, and they have these broad guidelines that are part of the race to the top things, which deal with graduation rates and tracking students and teacher assessments and principals and these kind of broad categories. And they're allowing the states to be able to say, how will you meet these and how will you measure your success in meeting these? And I think Wisconsin got at least two do-overs in theirs, which anybody would love if they had a paper to turn in and you got two do-overs. But Wisconsin at least got that many. And finally, on the third one, I believe, they passed. And so everybody's happy now.
Everybody's happy. I'm not sure about that, Professor Correa. Now, it's my understanding in order to get a waiver, you had to promise to show that students and schools are improving. That was just a promise that you had to do that, or did you have to show that whatever you have in place is already working? And the second part of the question is, what did the state show to the federal government that they are doing to improve schools?
I think that's a really keen question. And the reason that's a keen question is anybody that looked at the news yesterday perhaps have heard the story, and I believe it was Florida, Louisiana, Texas, and the Badger State have all said that they're not going to go ahead and set up certain provisions of the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of deciding they're going to go their own way, because they're saying perhaps in the fall there will be a political change, meaning either a new president, you know, Republicans taking over the Senate one way or the other, and they're waiting them out. Well, this is interesting because with these waivers, who exactly is going to be in the office to be able to find out 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 5 years from now, did you do what you said you were going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's quite sure. But so that's sort of a logistical problem, a nice piece of reality. But, you know, if you tell your son to clean their room and you open the door and it's not clean, that's okay. But if you call them on the phone, they'll tell you it's clean. Well, if there's nobody to call 2 or 4 years from now, you know, I mean, the whole rules could be rewritten. So it's a stopgap measure at best. But at least the states are happy that they're sort of freed from this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Wisconsin has pledged to do, and this is neat because it ties in, gee, I sound like my old social studies teacher that I am, at current events. Everybody probably might recall, a few weeks ago, there was an announcement that there was a Stevens Point-based computer software company that had recently been involved with perhaps receiving some favorability or extra opportunity in a proposal to put a statewide school accountability software system together. Well, this is exactly what needs to be in place, because Wisconsin does not have a comprehensive measure, say, from the Superior School District to the Kenosha School District about everybody's records, everybody's tests, everybody's progress, everybody's reading score, and et cetera. So there are now bids to be able to have this statewide system together. But Wisconsin is saying, we will have one. So it's this comprehensive collection of data, analysis of data, and implementation of changes from the data.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the more kind of the more specific ones. Wisconsin's also going to have new standards or new assessments for the Common Core standards in 2014. I think 45 states in D.C. Oh, let's see, what else? We're going to have students ready for college or 21st century careers. Doesn't that sound good?
Sure.
Let's see here. We are going to get rid of the adequate yearly progress measure, and instead schools will have five categories. Apparently not A, B, C, D, and F, but they'll have some type of categories of which higher performing and lowest performing. It still sounds like a report card to me, but I don't know. Let's see. That the lowest performing schools and the highest performing schools will be highlighted for attention. This is a neat one because the lower performing schools then will have apparently more direct DPI intervention. And this has been a big gap in educational reform. The higher performing schools, we are told in this waiver, will then be charged with sharing their practices consciously, deliberately, with other schools so that these programs can be emulated and mirrored and adopted. That's kind of a neat idea.
And what do you mean by, how do you determine a high-performing school? Is it great test scores on standardized tests, or what is it?
That's true. How do we measure those things? One of the things that that's very expensive in Wisconsin's current system is the WKCE, the Knowledge and Concepts Examiner. Yeah, that's it. The idea with that is it's a standardized test, and to develop standardized tests, very expensive. So, in essence, what Wisconsin has done, interestingly, is ceded some state sovereignty. Now, any libertarians out there, of course, they just sat up in their chairs because that's evil and also misguided. But 45 states and D.C., now, I think Texas and Alaska have not signed on, but most have. And what it is going to be one set of tests given to the same third graders in Iowa as third graders in Maine as third graders in Wisconsin.
Oh.
And you are going to see something proverbial hit the fan when these test scores come in, because now states can set their own levels for proficiency and exemplary and proficient and those kind of things. In the new test, you're going to be able to get a direct comparison with reading scores from Idaho and West Virginia or the Appleton Area School District. And where do my third graders, you know, where do they rank? And so it's going to be that, and it's going to be in the Common Core standards, which right now is just math and reading. But they're proposing down the road to also be able to give more attention to math, social studies, and those kind of things. Frankly, I think that train's going to run off the track before it gets to that point. But at least with reading and math performance, they're going to be able to do that very specifically. So those are the new standards. That is going to be some of those components, including graduation rates, retention rates, a variety of those kind of, you know, attendance rates. Hopefully, they might include participation in free and reduced lunch programs, Title I participation, different types of measures of money that goes in.
And what about teacher evaluation? That's been something we've been talking about. Are there certain ways that the Obama administration would like to have teachers evaluated, or is that a work in progress? How does it differ from No Child Left Behind?
Well, and again, boy, that's a big part of it. In this that's coming out, the waiver, once it gets fully implemented, there will be two parts to this. Schools or teachers will be evaluated half on principal observations and then perhaps peer observations or some component of that, and then half on student academic assessment performance. Now, that could be a variety of things, but certainly part of that will be test scores. And it's going to be test scores on these tests derived from the Common Core standards. Now, there is more argument and more discussion on fair, accurate, and helpful developmental ways to assess teacher performance than there are car reviews for anyone that's tried to buy a new car lately or a piece of stereo equipment. You're going to get lots of people arguing lots of different directions. But the idea is a more regimented, specific process to assess teacher performance. And WEAC, I'm not quite sure where they stand on all this. In fact, some people aren't even sure if WEAC is still standing right. In that way. But they've pretty much said, we need to be a part of this. We want to be a part of this. We support this. Now, how this 50-50 will shake out in terms of student academic assessment and then peer and principal observation, that's, I think, you know, the devil's in the details. But the idea is certainly these test scores are going to be an important part of this.
We're going to welcome phone calls. And here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655. Our guest this hour is Professor Steve Correa. He's Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College. And we're talking about the requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind law, which the U.S. Department of Education has announced last week that Wisconsin is relieved of some of those requirements. So what does that mean in terms of teacher evaluation, student performance, how we judge what's good and what's bad, what practices we want to emulate, what practices we want to get rid of, and we're welcoming your calls on this. And you can also go to the Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. So, to you in a moment, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency agents have killed two suspected drug runners in separate incidents in Honduras, the first on June 23rd and the second on July 3rd. We'll be talking about the expanding U.S. police and military presence in Central America and look at why Honduras has become a focus of anti-drug efforts. That's hour two. All right, to your phone calls, as we look at the waiver that Wisconsin received when it comes to many aspects of No Child Left Behind, Cindy in Burlington is our first caller. Hi, Cindy.
Oh, good morning. Hey, this nationwide test for third graders, I don't think that's going to be a very good idea because you're not actually, the environment that these children are brought up in are all different. You can't compare Milwaukee to a small city in Idaho. You know, you can't. But within the state, you probably could do it because it's a little more control. But nationwide, I don't think it's fair to the children just because of the environment that they're brought up in. Different parenting, you know, different, you know, upbringings, pressures and things like that.
Sure.
So I don't agree with the nationwide, but statewide, yes, compare it, maybe have it all under one. But national, no. That's my comment.
All right. Thank you, Cindy. Professor.
Well, she does bring up, you know, it's a very valid point. And, you know, it's one of those things where you sort of say, I like this painting, I hate this painting. I think that the advocates for the Common Core standards and the national test comparisons would say, yes, that's exactly what we want it to do. They would argue that fair in that term is another way of saying we're going to allow you to get by having lower expectations or different expectations. And that's not fair to you to be able to not judge you in the same standards as that child from Pocatello, Idaho, or, you know, or Spooner, Wisconsin. So they would say that's exactly the case. Now, on the other side of this, states are really under a budget gun. And one of the ways that states, I think, have cleverly found to deal with this is to say, you know, if there's a national test, it's going to cost us less. Now, Wisconsin has to develop this KCE and pay for it. And if anybody's taken statistics, validity and reliability for questions, and it's, or ETS, or if you've driven your child to the ACT test lately, which I just recently did, these are expensive tests, let alone to develop them. Well, states have said if there's one test and we're all using the same test, boy, it's going to save us a lot of money. We can get our statistics. We can get our evidence. So I would commend the caller for saying that it's very difficult to compare exactly one population to the other. But the supporters of this would say, yes, that's what we want. We don't want excuses. We want outcomes.
Thanks, Cindy. Tony in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Fine.
I just have two quick comments. One thing I'd like to say is that as I've worked with teachers, and I'm part of a technical teaching profession, is that with society having so many problems, we constantly are expecting teachers to be parents, and they can't do it. And so I'm looking at No Child Left Behind as something that really we're having we're putting onto teachers, and we really need to start with parents. And then number two is that I have three kids. One's a pilot, one's a doctor, and one's a welder. And the thing is, the track for my kids to be educated over all these years has been exactly the same. And I actually feel that my youngest son, the welder, is the one that's been the least educated. I think we need to train or teach our kids earlier and test them to see what tracks are better for them. And so I'll take my responses off the air.
Thanks, Tony.
Well, he certainly has very children. That would be pretty
cool.
Yes,
he does.
That's pretty neat. Tracking has been a popular idea in the United States. Sometimes there's de facto tracking. An example of that might be if your child plays a musical instrument. A lot of schools, they have band or orchestra first period. And then by the nature of scheduling, they sort of go through the day with those kids, and that's almost a de facto tracking. Some schools more aggressively do it, but we've tried to not have tracking in the United States. That is a feature of European education, and that may come out a little bit more, but that's not exactly here. One of the, you could say, the drawbacks or the smorgasbord of the current waivers is we want students to both be college ready and career ready when they graduate from high school. And boy, that's a lot of stress on front loading those kids. My youngest son had a career conference at seventh grade. Now, I on the one hand, that's okay. It's nice to think about what you're going to be doing 10 years from now. On the other hand, boy, I don't know if I'm comfortable with at least my son being pushed that way. He survived. He's just fine. But schools try to be all things to all people, and especially American education. We do try to be everything. That's why our high schools are called comprehensive high schools and not technical and career and those kind of things. But he does bring up another point that I think that's kind of interesting. The achievement gap is something that gets a lot of attention. I found some interesting statistics on this that I thought would be sort of appropriate to share here. At the current rate of closing the achievement gap, Washington State would take 105 years for the fourth grade to be able to close the achievement gap between whites and non-whites in their reading scores.
Goodness.
At their current rate of improvement. Florida would take almost 30 years. Native Americans compared to whites in reading performance in fourth grade, the gap is widening. It is not decreasing. The only group where there's pronounced narrowing in the achievement gap is among Latinos. And boys are behind girls in reading in every state in the United States. Now, that's mixing a lot of ideas together, but we're not really talking about changing exactly how we do it. We're just talking about some changes in how we measure.
Mm. Well, I have read, and we've been talking about this issue for so long, and we have so little change. Let's talk more about low-performing schools. I got this vague sentence from reading about this, that the lowest-performing schools under whatever we're doing now, race to the top, will face new kinds of interventions that will be more effective. Do you know what those interventions are? And what do you think we could do that would be effective?
Well, and I think that that's, again, very insightful observation. And anybody else, sort of one of the problems here, that not only is the devil in the details, sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. We have interesting issues of not only state sovereignty, but a tradition of local control in Wisconsin. And boy, remember a year or two ago when the discussion was the mayoral takeover of the Milwaukee public school?
Sure, I do.
Whoa! And then, of course, it was almost as if, well, I didn't say that. And so nobody quite knows exactly what that means. Now, I would imagine that there would probably have to be some state statute adjustments on takeover and removal and direction and school board members and who makes the rules and who enforces the rules and who measures the rule. I mean, this is very involved. Is that necessary? It may very well be in a lot of places. But certainly what these places need is they need to be able to come in and say, you know, the entire school is not failing. That is never the case anywhere. So what are we doing right? What are we doing adequately by some measures? And where are we not achieving the goals that we want? So it's almost, 5 years ago or so, the Navy had a lot of crashes on their aircraft carriers, and they just shut down operations. They had a complete review, and then they went back up. Well, we don't do that in education because we take a summer vacation, but we don't really stop and say, wait a minute. So it's really sort of a juggernaut or momentum. And schools need to pull back and say, what are we doing that works? And take the politics out of that. And, you know, instead we have a kaleidoscope of ideas. But again, as that very first caller mentioned out, you know, what works with Native American children at a reservation in Montana do not work for urban-based children
right.
in Milwaukee. And so it really takes finesse, and that's where the expertise, the art of teaching, and the respect that the profession demands needs to be done. And one of the neat things about this waiver is the schools that are doing well need to be able to have help in getting that message out, because teachers close the door and do what they do. And we need to be able to illuminate the practice.
And Professor Correa, what about considering the substantial changes in the state of Wisconsin as a result of Act 10, and you mentioned WEAC, who knows what kind of power they have right now, what place will teachers have at the table to determine what works and what doesn't work, or has that all changed in this state?
I read a couple comments by both superintendents and school board members from southeastern Wisconsin, and they've done away with the master contract, which anybody that's familiar with teaching, that was the agreement that the union and the school board signed that kind of guided workday procedures, those kind of things. And instead now it's called a handbook. And it's interesting. Some of the school board members said, in a very top-down way, what is written in the handbook will be adhered to. And others said that we need to get lots of voices at the table so that the handbook rules, again, same language with handbook, so that the handbook rules and guidelines have the input and voice of everybody involved, not only in making the rules, but in implementing the rules and in supporting the rules. And that's a very different approach. So I think you'll see some will be much more top-down and some will be much more inclusive. And my bet would be with success for the schools that are much more inclusive. But that's my own personal bias.
I was thinking that's probably the way some people approach the classroom, too. Some is top-down and some is quite the opposite.
Absolutely.
And who were your favorite teachers when you think about that? We welcome phone calls, but lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation. What we're talking about this hour is that the U.S. Department of Education has approved the request from the state of Wisconsin to start a new school improvement and accountability plan. It looks like we really are at the end of No Child Left Behind, and we're talking about what will be happening on a national level and what will be happening as a result of Ag 10 in the state of Wisconsin as well. But the overall broad question is, what do we do to make sure that students in schools are improving? And, of course, the perennial question, what do we do to cut in half the achievement gaps that we have among ethnic and economic groups in the state of Wisconsin, and what we do nationally in that regard as well. So our lines are open as we address those important subjects. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Steve Correa is our guest, joins us frequently talking about education topics. He is Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College. Let's just spend, as the phone calls are coming in, into huge numbers here, proficiency. Who will be determining as we look at changing the tests? And it's my understanding those tests aren't going to be ready for a while, right? It's going to take a while to put them together.
Those will take a couple years.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a couple years.
Yeah, I think the they're not the Common Core Standards test will not be implemented, I believe, until 2014-2015 school year. And they'll be computer-based. And so the idea then is the paperwork, and if everybody remembers filling in those bubbles or whatever, that's all yesterday's news. And so it's much more the ability, you know, they're going to go right in, go into a database, software will be ready, boom. You'll probably get your test results back faster than your driver's license.
Interesting. And who will be determining proficiency levels? Is that a state decision or it's a national decision? And who decides that?
What a great question. Of course, some of it, I think, is going to be the shame factor. Oh, my gosh, we're behind. And then insert state of your choice. because it'll be, you know, whatever the case it might be. Now, you know, Minnesota and North Dakota always have a good rivalry back and forth. I would imagine they'll probably compare each other's. If everybody's smart, and, of course, I think they're going to compare their scores to most of Wisconsin's, most of Minnesota's, and most of Iowa's, because historically these are three high-performing states.
Mm-hmm.
They do very, very well. But certainly presently now, you know, we're up at about the 80% range or something in some of the levels for reading. Well, it's not going to be there. We're probably talking falling back into the 50s or 40s. Just because the cut scores or the scores that are necessary, they're going to change. Now, who's going to decide this? That I'm not sure about. That still may be a state issue, but I think the idea will be, hey, everybody's on the same page. Picture a nice scattergram with all the state scores across the country. And then the idea is, you know, the rallying cry. You know, we had the missile gap. We had all the other gaps. Well, now we're going to have the reading score gap. And only now they're going to be able to point to a very specific number.
Jim in Kenosha, hi.
Hello. The NCLB was bound to fail because it's setting the standard of at 100%. You both commented on that, and I'm glad to see that you know, dream has or threat has ended, and maybe we'll get at reality here. Now, it was kind of like if these teachers would only work harder, we'll just threaten them all. The state will take them over. They'll lose this and they'll lose that, and they'll be in big trouble. They just screw them down harder and make them work harder, and everything will turn out all right. And, of course, we all know there's just broader social, cultural issues, economic issues that are resulting in the test scores that we have. By the way, I think it's good that we've had NCLB because we have, and the testing has been good because it's shown us the problems that we have. Now we have to, as you have said, talk about what we're going to do. And I think it needs a combined effort of education, certainly, but social services, municipalities, business, kind of a Manhattan Project for this, but to try to deal with the symptoms of poverty by just having educators do it and say, you could just work harder. I think we've proven that is not going to work. I'd also comment that there really are few examples of places where there's been true change in an objective sense in a high poverty area or even middling poverty area, just because of what changes in educational practice. I know in Wisconsin, they searched all over, came up with kind of one elementary school in Appleton, maybe, and one over here, and that was about it. And so this has proven that there needs to be a whole different approach involving more resources and many other aspects of society.
Professor Correa.
Well, he's very well spoken and knowledgeable. I think that, interestingly, and he also talked about reliable measures and you know, do we really know what changes have come about? Florida and Texas have been among the most statistically successful states at raising the achievement level for non-white students of color across the board. However, that pace of change and pace of growth and improvement is starting to slow, and the reason it's starting to slow is these become more complex, more detailed challenges. And your caller talked about really a constellation of social services and support that's necessary. And I think he's exactly right. There are some pockets of this. I know that the St. Paul, Minnesota schools have done some really neat things with partnering with some social service agencies for, you know, like the child that only gets food at school and doesn't get any at home, you know, using some of that same information to be able to help that family to do well, and whether it's English proficiency or whatever the case it might be. But it takes school to be able to have a wider view of the contributing factors for what it takes for that child to be successful. Now, at the same time, anybody that's taken sociology recalls push-pull factors. At the same time, you've got this pull factor that is, or is it a pull, push? Well, anyway, you've got this same factor that the schools are being, under No Child Left Behind, it was an increasingly narrow measure of school success. Well, here's a complement to this waiver process. Now we're including things like graduation rates, career skills. Those are good things. But we need to actively involve the community. And so I think one of the good things years from now, maybe 20 years, teachers' roles will not stop at that closed door. And so they're going to need increased training, increased sensitivity, increased awareness, and encouragement to be able to get out into the community and make those connections, not just at football practice and whatever, all the way through. Some schools do that. They do that phenomenally. But, you know, we need to free teachers to be able to, because they're the front line. They're the primary practitioner, to use the you know, medical analogy. They're the ones that have to be trained and have the expertise to recognize those needs and address those needs and direct resources to those needs. But boy, that's a fundamental difference of a teacher's role, because that's not just teaching reading to Zachary in fourth grade. A different role.
Yeah, that adds a lot to a teacher's day. That's a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Jim, thanks for the call. Cheryl in McNaughton, hi.
Hi, I'm Carol, and I am spending my summer in northern Wisconsin, but I teach in the Milwaukee area during the school year, and I teach high school in a suburban district, but I don't teach AP classes. I've never taught AP classes. I have some philosophical issues with AP classes. And if that component of evaluating teachers, that how are you going to compare my kids to my colleagues' kids who are taking the AP classes? You know, that's another one of these issues that's part of this big mix. I have, you know, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I've seen a number of, you know, proposed changes along the way, and we act on some of them to a certain extent, but then everybody pulls back. And I look at this now as it is an opportunity, but it's another way, another situation where how are we going to get teachers and school districts to really get on board with it? I definitely am glad that the negative aspects, the fear aspects of No Child Left Behind are now out of the mix, but to get the amount of change as fast as some parts of society ask for, I think, is also unrealistic.
I hope you're enjoying northern Wisconsin. We were up there last week, a little warm. But to the topic at hand, you know, it's interesting. As budgetary constraints come in, I kind of wonder what will happen with AP classes. Those are expensive. Some districts push those very strongly, and of course some students are very well positioned to do very well in those classes. There's a writing component. They move at a very prescribed pace. Students tend to like it. But if you're not ready for an AP class, wow, talk about whiplash. You are just going to get hammered. You're not going to be successful without support and preparation before you get there. But, again, the idea with the Common Core standards, and this is one we haven't brought up, but it's and since the caller teaches, I'm sure she thinks about this. Are these standards floors, which means this is the basic, and we're going to achieve beyond that, or are they ceilings? This is to what we aspire. And so, you know, how the districts will approach that. And some districts, like, you know, some of the more prestigious districts in Wisconsin, they are going to blow through these and not have an issue. And some of the districts with lower achievement rates, a lot more diversity in their districts, you know, other challenges that they come in with, poverty and et cetera. Wow. They're going to be looking at these Common Core standards as ceilings. We've got to get to this level. But again, the idea is one size fits all. We're going to make all this work, but the waiver advantage is the idea to allow the states to be able to achieve those in ways that they have ownership of and not this federally mandated one-size-fits-all. So, yeah, your glass is kind of half full, depending how thirsty you are.
So. Thank you so much, Cheryl, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. And you can also go to the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Wisconsin has been granted a waiver, no longer having to adhere to most of the No Child Left Behind law. And we're talking about what's in its place this hour with Professor Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to Luther in Sheboygan next. Hi, Luther.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this conversation. I teach in Howard Grove, and this just is a really interesting topic, so thank you. I guess my question or comment is, I was wondering what the report snapshot would be of each individual child with the Common Core standards testing. And I guess my thought was that is the 50th percentile going to change? And if there are the most successful states across the country, if their children are going to start achieving and maybe their 30th percentile child is now a 50th percentile child, is that going to somehow be a detriment where that kid would get less attention because now they're being compared nationally? And then my other point, too, is about teacher evaluations. I love the idea of actually incorporating some test scores into that evaluation process because I find that there are some parts of being a teacher that can't easily be assessed, like, I guess, time management, dedication, and personality, and I think that all those do kind of fit in with how successful a teacher can be. So thanks very much, and I will take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Luther.
Hey, those are some neat questions. I think one of the things you're going to see from a strong teacher education program in the very near future is a graduate will need to have a really solid grasp, and this is going to be without a question, of statistics and statistical analysis. And one of his questions was the 50th percentile. Now, in a statistics class, you quickly learn, and some people's eyes are going to start to roll at this, mean, median, and mode. The most frequent response, the one that's smack in the middle, and the one that when you extend everything, you know, which is the one that happens the most frequent, et cetera, et cetera. So the 50th percentile may or may not be a helpful measure you're going to have to really be able to dig down and say, what are we looking at here? And this is the component that I believe, I know I'm up on my soapbox here, but this is the one I believe will be the sign of a strong school. What do these statistics tell us that can help our students to do better?
Jerry,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, and not what can these statistics tell us so that we can get rid of teachers?
Yeah.
That's a misguided use of that. Now, okay, in a couple cases, you might have some egregious examples, but I can tell you, you probably didn't need the statistics to do that anyway. The other thing, though, that the caller was talking about is this idea of individual student profiles. And that's where this comprehensive statewide system will get some attention because, you know, what do we want this to be able to do? Are we going to be able to track the student? The goal, by the way, is almost cradle to grave. So libertarians, again, are a little concerned with this. But the idea is really, you know, where did the student start and have they progressed all the way through? And what have been the inputs that have made this successful? Or what do we think we can ascertain with that? You know, correlation or causation would be much harder to determine. But one of the provisions in the new waiver is groups that are very small in number. And I'll just give you an example. There are some school districts that have very small numbers of special needs students. And they do not shake out their scores. They don't distribute their scores because it could shine too much of an individual spotlight because it's pretty easy to target these students. The new waivers cut that threshold in half. So some districts could have as few as 20 special needs students, and those scores are still going to be shared. Now, we can talk about privacy issues and those kind of things, but the idea is that we're going to be able to get more information on individual students. Now, if your child's doing well, please give me more information so we can affirm my wonderful parenting style or my wonderful teaching style. If your child isn't doing well, caller's exactly right. You know, who's going to explain these? And that will be kind of interesting. Nobody knows, by the way.
Let's go to Jerry in Menasha. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. In the No Child Left Behind law, it allowed military recruiters into the schools to recruit eventually potential people into the services. I wonder if that has been eliminated in this revision of the No Child Left Behind law. And I just wonder if this is the politicalization with its goal to privatize our public schools, because it's been proven that vouchers don't really work well. Are we going to be teaching to the test on a state level as opposed to a national level? There are many issues relative to this, and there's a lot of areas that are vague. I'd like to hear your
comments. Let's start with the voucher schools. Are voucher schools involved in this? Do they have to meet the same standards?
Well, the Romney people are strong advocates for voucher schools. Romney was a moderate supporter of voucher schools in Massachusetts, but that didn't go very far. He was an advocate for school reform in Massachusetts. I think that was when the BU or BC college took over one of the school districts there. So he has some history with that, but this specifically is not a part of this. Now, the caller did talk about the military being involved. That's not a part of this. In other words, that has not been changed to my knowledge. But she is exactly right. This is political. It's political season. You can't think otherwise. However, this is from a Democratic administration, and it's bypassed Congress. And again, especially the House of Representatives, but this is not specifically pro-privatization by any means. It's really giving a lot of power and control to states and their central, you know, Department of Education, Department of Public Instruction, whatever the case it might be. But the idea is This is indeed, and I think we said this at the beginning, ceding sovereignty in a way with this national test. There will be less state control on assessment. There will be state control on what to do with that assessment information. The other issues will get shaken out in the campaign, but advocates for privatization of education, they've been pretty quiet on this, which tells me they're probably waiting for November and the election outcome, because Republicans are going to, if should they take more. One of the reasons this hasn't gotten through Congress is because the proper role for the United States Department of Education is up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Some want less, some want more, and Republicans definitely want less. And that's where politics makes some interesting bedfellows.
Yeah, Professor Correa, thank you as always. Our guest this hour, Professor Steve Correa, Associate Professor of Teacher Education at St. Norbert College, talking about what happened now that the state of Wisconsin and many other states as well have been relieved of most of the requirements of the federal No Child Left Behind law. So what next? We'll keep talking about it. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Brett Jaspers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We will continue in a little while after the news.